guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon and another episode of Action Movie Anatomy. We are covering today on the show one of the all-time action films. Can you believe it? We haven't covered it? It's The Terminator. We're back. It's 1984. I'll be back. That was horrible. Let's do the show.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! God, I love the music. It's so sweet. Oh, God, I love the music.
Of course we're going to have the Terminator theme going, guys. Come on! What's up, everybody in the chat? Glad to have you here on Action Movie Anatomy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. This is Action Movie Anatomy, guys. We talk action movies here, and this is the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies, all things movie-related. It's Action Movie Anatomy. We're going to break down the Terminator for you right now. 96 episodes deep, we haven't covered the Terminator. How the fuck did that happen?
I don't know, but... Well, it's because we went T2 first. T2 feels like the more appropriate movie for our show.
It's true. This is almost like a horror movie compared to T2.
Yeah.
It's a thriller. It's almost like a slasher thriller.
Who are you, by the way?
What?
Who are you, by the way?
Oh, I'm Ben Bateman. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. This is me, Ben Bateman. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media if you want to follow along in the conversation. I love to talk action movies. You can find this podcast at AMA Podcast on Twitter as well.
Yeah, and if you guys follow Ben on Anchor and on his Twitter, he's just recently ranked his top 50 movies, and I looked at the list. It's a great fucking list.
I knew that when we had the conversation in the first place about ranking the list, where can the folks find you?
Oh, yeah. I'm Andrew Guy. You guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter and here every Wednesday and Friday.
I knew that you would get in on the game, but I knew that when I finished my 50, you'd immediately get jealous and watch your own list of
50. Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, because when we started, it was like one of those things like, oh, my God, this is going to be a mountain of work.
Yeah.
And then you get like 10 seconds into it, and you're like, oh, my God, this one. And then you have like 70, 80 movies.
Yeah.
So the fact that you trimmed it down into a solid list that you can strongly, confidently call your 50 is really impressive.
And it's ranked.
It's ranked.
Which was
order.
Hard to do. Yeah. Which was hard to do.
There's movies that didn't. The Godfather didn't make it.
Yeah.
Star Wars 4 and 6 didn't make it, right?
No, 4 and 5.
4 and 5 didn't make it.
Jedi.
So
Jedi was the only Star Wars that made my list.
Anyway, this is a different show about us talking about Terminator, but I just thought that was so interesting.
Yes, definitely. It was an exciting list. If you guys want to hear me talk about that, actually, you can go find this new app I'm on called Anchor. It's basically podcast meets Twitter. So it's like Snapchat stories of little audio blurbs that we record into our phones every day. Mm-hmm. You go listen, and then they fall off after 24 hours. And every Tuesday, I'm going to be doing Top 50 Tuesday, doing a whole show that day, 10 minutes dedicated to my movies in order for 50 weeks. So starting this week, I just shared it on my Twitter, Ben Bateman Media. You can find the link there. Hot Rod, the Andy Samberg film from 2007, is my 50th favorite movie of all time.
Excellent movie.
Excellent film.
I want to hop in real quick. The chat is blowing up, which is super exciting. Everybody's really excited to get talking, and we're going to get moving right into the episode. One point, though, that I think is interesting is that Richard Jarvie wrote that he, well, first of all, we opened to the Terminator theme. People were very happy about that. But he was saying that he hasn't watched this movie in years, and it's aged quite a bit, but it's only made it better. So I think that's a super interesting conversation. We're going to get into the trailer here in a minute, but we have a conversation about this movie and how it's aged coming up.
Yeah, we should just clear real quick, guys. The action movies we cover on this show, aside from being made after 1981, which is like an unofficial rule we've never broken, but we probably will someday, they adhere to four basic rules. One, the hero always plays by their own rules. Well, the hero in this movie, I guess, is Michael Biehn.
Yeah, it's technically Michael Biehn. If you want to get super technical, it's John Connor.
Yeah. It is, and Kyle Reese knows, I mean, he does play by his own rules.
For sure,
definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't even go and approach her to protect her until she's almost murdered. So he's like, I had to make sure.
Yeah.
Like, really?
The hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. Well, they are, really. Kyle Reese and the T-800, mm-hmm. like, he knows everything, but the Terminator knows just as much. He's the only guy that knows how to stop the Terminator, so he's smarter than all the cops, he's smarter than everyone else, but the Terminator is just as smart. So I think that rule's perfect in this
situation. For sure, the two of them are both just the smartest people in the room. Everyone else is in the way.
Yeah. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. Yeah, definitely. He's like military. He's part of the future militia trying to stop the Terminators. And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion.
Hey, really quick, I'm going to cut you off there. It sounds like a lot of people are having trouble hearing us
in
the chat. I don't know if that's anything for you, Marissa. I got five or six people talking about how they can't hear us at all.
There's no audio feed?
I don't know. No, it just says it's really low. There's literally like seven people all in a row talking about how it's too quiet.
Oh.
Marissa? All right. Perfect. There we go. And you said the fourth rule was that there's a minimum of one explosion, which there definitely is in this film.
Yes, definitely. Cameron loves his explosions. He's like he's the classy Michael Bay in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's pretty much how we do the show, guys. We've decided to cover the Terminator finally after long last. How's that volume in the chat? People still saying it's better?
They're still saying it's too quiet.
It's real quiet?
Yeah. They said it's better now. All right.
Oh,
awesome.
Excellent. Awesome.
Thank you so much for that, guys. And thank you, Marissa. Marissa Serafini up in the booth.
What's up, Marissa? Let's cue the trailer for Terminator. This is an 84 trailer, guys. It's an old fucking trailer.
Yeah. You can tell because there's no music.
In the 21st century, a weapon will be invented like no other.
Oh, this is a good static.
This weapon will be powerful, versatile, and indestructible.
Do you know whose voice that is?
It can't be reasoned with. It can't be bargained with.
You won't know.
It will feel
like Richard Branson,
no pity,
the owner of
no remorse, no pain.
Optimus Prime, no voice actor.
Oh, is
Optimus
it?
Prime.
Nice.
It will have.
What's his name? I do know his name.
I know this. It's,
to return to the present
not Kevin Conner,
and prevent the future.
I always
this
wish it was just Hugo
will
Weaving.
Be called the Terminator.
You're dead, honey.
80s trailer.
Yeah.
They just, like, hadn't really figured it out yet.
Yeah, they hadn't figured out horror. They hadn't really figured out anything.
Yeah,
what like, as to what to
the
sell.
Date, 12th May, Thursday.
What year?
If this was the 80s, I would still be probably pretty intrigued.
Well, yeah, you'd see, like, the effects and stuff would be
you.
Interesting.
I'm Reese, DN38416, assigned to protect you. You've been targeted for termination.
There you go. Yeah. It just took a second to get going. Yeah.
Why does it want me? Why me?
I've loved him my whole life, sir.
That part's
Arnold
great.
Schwarzenegger
yeah.
is the Terminator.
So there is that one moment when he's in that bar
is in
shooting.
His hands.
Yeah. It was in his hands.
Yeah.
When he's in the bar shooting the Uzi, and he's like,
yeah.
There's like one shot where he looks so ridiculous. It's one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. It's almost my fist pump.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Marissa. So yeah, that's the trailer for Terminator, guys. I mean, trailers really have become an art, and in 84,
yeah.
they weren't even like to the point yet where they realized they could improve. It was literally like, we can advertise the movie by cutting clips together. We'll call it a trailer. We've been doing it for a few years.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like back then, it was just anything was okay. And nowadays, like, because this is obviously one of the best movies ever made, and that trailer's horrible. Whereas
yeah.
now you get movies that are god awful with incredible trailers.
Yeah, right.
And it's kind of a shame that it's taken that turn.
Yeah, I think they just realized like we can make trailers extremely dramatic. We can use different takes from the movie that aren't even in the movie
yeah.
and use
B-roll.
Them in the trailer mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and scenes that don't make the movie. It's the trailer has to tell its own story. It has to inspire you in its own way now, and that wasn't the case back in the day.
Yeah.
The actor who plays Optimus Prime, whose name I like should,
I know his name. It's driving me crazy
because yeah, I feel like I
Marissa's on it. Someone's got to be on it.
This is like one of those trivia things. Oh god, I would lose in Schmodown right now, and
I
should know this because this is I'm obsessed. Oh, Transformers the animated movie is not on my top 50. I just realized.
Is that gonna be in there?
Oh, how did I not do that?
Gotta redo the whole thing.
Does that mean
man?
That Hot Rod gets bumped?
I don't know. It's too late. You already started, so
oh,
you gotta bump
no.
something else.
That's brutal.
All right. Well, while they look that up, let's move on to the next part of the show here, which is our
Peter.
Bold thesis statement.
What did you say?
Peter Cullen.
Yes, that's exactly right. Peter Cullen. Yeah. That's the guy who does the voice in the Terminator. So
yeah,
guys, let's move into thesis statement. This is the part of the show. We share a bold statement, a bold thought. Should be almost like rooted in hyperbole. The best this, the greatest this, the worst this, the only this. Should never be this is my favorite something. And it's kind of a thought that we defend throughout the film. So I really like yours. I thought this was great.
Yeah, I want you to go first, though.
Okay.
Because mine's going to segue into another conversation, I think.
Okay, great. Yeah. So I'm going to go first by saying, starting with this film, no actor's career has been more benefited by his work with one director than Michael Biehn. And I say that because many of the other actors that worked as muses with their directors were just great actors, and they had really like vibrant careers. You know, like, I mean,
right.
De Niro.
So, like, you got De Niro with Scorsese, you got Leo with Scorsese, you've got Denzel with Tony Scott.
Yeah, guys that really work a lot with one director. Even some actors who have worked or actresses that have worked with Woody Allen a bunch of times, like
mm-hmm.
Diane Keaton's worked with Woody Allen a bunch. Diane Keaton had a vibrant career. She did tons of work with tons of different people for decades. If you really look at Michael Biehn's career, his earliest hit was 1984 with The Terminator. He was in The Fan in 1981, the original The Fan.
Right, right.
The one that was remade with De Niro. But really, in 1984, he makes The Terminator. In 1986, he's like... He's also like... This is the other thought that I was having. He's not the hero in any of the movies that he stars in.
Yeah.
Even though he stars in the hero role. It's weird. Like, in The Terminator... You know, he said to one stat I pulled was that Schwarzenegger said to Cameron, "Hey, I'd like to play the Kyle Reese role, not the Terminator."
Right.
And Cameron said, "No, no, this is a movie about the Terminator, not about Kyle Reese. It's not about the hero; it's about the Terminator." So that's why Schwarzenegger plays the Terminator. You know, even though Kyle Reese is the hero male lead, he's not really the hero of the movie.
Yeah, for sure. And that's like what we were talking about in the beginning. He doesn't have like that hero characteristic. I don't know what's missing exactly.
Same thing in 86 with Aliens. He's definitely like the hero character. He's like the badass dude that as a kid you had the action figure. You wanted to be Hicks. But it's Ripley's movie. It's Sigourney Weaver's the hero of that movie. Or it's the alien. It's her versus the alien. And even in The Abyss, which I have not seen for a long time, again, it's not a movie that you say Michael Biehn's the reason that movie's good.
Exactly.
And it's just really interesting that like his career, he ended up being in, you know, really three other super relevant movies, Navy SEALs being sort of the odd man out.
Right.
But Tombstone and The Rock, both favorites of ours, and he has great characters in both. And in both situations...
It's the same thing.
It's not about Johnny Ringo.
It's not about Commander Anderson.
No, but he's great in all those movies. So I would say no actor's career has ever been benefited more by his work with one director than Michael Biehn working with James Cameron.
I mean, I would agree. I honestly think the only person that you can argue with that is Arnold. And that's just because of T1.
Yeah, true.
I completely agree because there's something about Michael Biehn and someone that was placed in a leading man role in so many movies that are literally classics, timeless, unforgettable. And you're not like, he never moved to that second tier that we always talk about, that upper tier of being a real leading man movie star. Because back then, there were movie stars. He could have and should have been one.
He was like really set up to be that guy.
Yeah.
And relative to a lot of guys, he had a phenomenal career.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Phenomenal. Like, he's super recognizable. Like, when we talked to him last summer, it was, like, so awesome. It was so exciting
for us.
It was
an amazing interview.
Yeah, and it was just, I mean, it was, like, the number of times I've watched you on screen in these movies is mind-blowing to me. So, it's not to say that he's not a superstar. He is.
But, I mean, when you were looking up his list of movies, the last thing that he'd done that was relevant was The Rock.
Yeah, it's, like,
that
if
was,
you...
like, actually a good film.
You go look past 96, and it's, like, this weird spiraling career of, like... odd films here and there where he's got like kind of a relevant role and kind of he's in this movie, he's in that movie, and most of them you're like, oh, that movie existed. I forgot that movie existed.
Right.
You know, in the last like 6 years, he was in that movie Take Me Home Tonight.
Right, right, right. That's the
that's
the
like
comedy.
Yeah, or with like Topher Grace.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, wow, like that's
a weird one.
Only one I've heard of. You know, he played. You know what movie he's in? This is another reason we have to do it on the show: The Art of War.
Oh, I love The Art of War.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he is. He's
in The Art of War.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's Robert Bly.
Another role or someone that Paxton and Cameron, that's completely true.
Yeah.
That's another one, but it's like Paxton was never a lead in a Cameron movie.
Yeah, and also Paxton was able to have a lot of success in a lot of other movies that weren't just Cameron movies. Like, in fact, most of his roles in Cameron movies, aside from Aliens, were kind of irrelevant. Like, he's great in True Lies and he's great in Aliens, but... a lot of his most famous work is in other stuff. Other directors used him.
So my thesis, and it's definitely very close to yours. Sorry, there's just so much going on here. I cannot give that order. Yes, we know. so my thesis is that this is the most important film that the four lead people made, and that's Hamilton, Arnold, Biehn, and Cameron.
Wow, you think this is the most important movie Cameron ever made?
I think this is the most important film any of them made. I think it goes... without saying for all three, for the three of them, I think you just argued the Biehn point. Hamilton, she's great. She didn't have much of a career past the first two Terminator movies.
Yeah.
I mean, she did, but like, those are the movies, you know? Arnold would have never had the same chance that he did. I mean, I know he'd done both the Conan movies.
Yeah.
And maybe if there's someone that was born in like the 60s or 70s that is in the chat that knows and was alive and watching movies and in the theaters at the time. But when Conan, for me, The Barbarian and Destroyer, those aren't movies that I tie to Arnold Schwarzenegger when I grew up as a kid. He was the Terminator.
They're silly movies, and I think there's been a bit of revisionist history, people going back and remembering those movies as though they
more
were...
more fondly.
Yeah, like they're campy and they're great now because Schwarzenegger is Schwarzenegger. But if he doesn't make The Terminator, he's just like... he's just like some action star in the 80s. And sure, he had the Olympia titles, but I don't know that his career blows up the way that it blows up without Terminator.
Absolutely. And even the people in the chat here, our fans, are talking about how it's the most perfect role for Arnold.
Ever,
and it
yeah.
was. It really was, because what it did is it literally used all of his advantages. I mean, excuse me, used all of his strengths and weaknesses to their advantage.
Yeah.
Can't speak English perfect. Give him like 13 words in the whole movie.
Yeah.
And make him super
lines,
robotic.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, he's fucking gigantic?
Yeah.
Let's make him an unkillable robot. This was the movie when you put Arnold, it was like, okay, all right, everyone loves him now.
Cameron knew how invaluable Schwarzenegger was to this.
Totally.
To the point that his schedule shooting Conan the Destroyer had him 9 months past the time they wanted to start shooting this movie. And mm-hmm. Cameron was like, the movie isn't, I can't make it without Schwarzenegger, so I'll wait.
Right.
And in the 9 months waiting, he started working on another writing project, which subsequently became Aliens.
And correct me if I'm wrong, and it might be in here. Was this the movie that... No. Cameron wrote a first short that he used while being a truck driver, right? That was the first...
This is his second directed film. He had directed the sequel to Piranha. Piranha 2...
was the one, and that was what he used the money from becoming a truck driver.
There's a short before Piranha.
Right. That's what I was thinking
of.
So, my point is that James Cameron had done the short, and he'd done Piranha 2, and then he'd done Terminator... And then he does Aliens in the Abyss.
Yeah.
And he does Terminator for $6.4 million, I think is what it is we have written down here. Yeah, $6.4 million. When someone takes these people you've basically never heard of, all of them, and he puts them in a movie for $6.4 million, and it becomes one of the greatest movies ever made, that gives you the freedom to make The Abyss and make Aliens and then make Titanic and then make Avatar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, obviously, Titanic and Avatar have made billions of dollars.
Yeah.
They would have never, ever happened had he not made Terminator.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. The comeback with Titanic's really interesting. We can talk about that. But the only one that I would argue in there, mm-hmm. I agree that this is the most important movie Cameron ever made. I agree that because this is the one that springboarded him. And I would agree... for sure on Bean and definitely Schwarzenegger. The only one, and the rule would be fought against just because she would never have been in the sequel had she not been in the first one.
Right.
But Hamilton is so kind of irrelevant in this movie, mm-hmm. but she's so iconic and awesome in the second movie.
Yeah.
She's like borderline Oscar worthy in the second movie.
Absolutely she is. I mean, Cameron was fighting for her to win an Oscar.
Yeah, that's the only one I would argue there. And the point gets broken down just in the sense that, like, she would never have been in the sequel, obviously.
Right.
But I do think that when you think about all the other people, it's like I can tie Kyle Reese, his role in Terminator 1, it is still the most important thing he ever did. I mean, Hicks is more memorable, but like...
So you're, what
he's
you're
the
saying,
hero of the movie. So like she's not really that special in this movie.
Yeah.
She's really special in the second movie. So that's the only one where I would say maybe that's the more important movie for her.
Right. But I think you already answered the question by saying it's like she wouldn't have been in it if she weren't in this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you can sort of use that argument for like, so it's the same thing we talked about Danny Boyle with Trainspotting.
Right.
Versus 28 Days Later. Mm-hmm. He never makes 28 Days Later if not for Trainspotting.
For sure.
Even though I think 28 Days Later is the more important.
And that made me think real quick, like with Arnold in this role.
Yeah.
This is like the Arnold role. This is his career defining role. No matter what Arnold does, this is the one.
Sure.
He's the Terminator. What other actors or actresses have there been in history where they did something, one movie, and you were like, holy shit, who are you?
The breakthrough?
That put you on the map. Like, Catherine Zeta-Jones and The Mask of Zorro is classic. Like, that, my mom reminded me of that, because that's...
Yeah.
She fell in love with her. She thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world, and she'd never heard of her before that.
Yeah, I think... I mean, there's a lot. I think this is what it is for me. So, you have... actors or actresses that have a breakthrough.
Uh-huh.
But the real definitive thing here is, like, did they have a career after the breakthrough in the few years after?
Yes.
Because take, like, Robert Pattinson, for instance. His breakthrough would be, like, that Harry Potter movie. And then Twilight is
that's the one we'd talk about.
But he hasn't really had a career after that.
No.
So, like, it's sort of interesting to talk about, but it's mm-hmm. also kind of like no one really cares about Robert Pattinson. Versus, like, I'll give you a good one. Keira Knightley in Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's fantastic. Orlando Bloom in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, both of those are huge. I mean, Keira Knightley, I fell in love with Keira Knightley in high school when that movie came out. I was like, who is this? And she, so did everyone. She became the it girl, and she had two Oscar nods in the next 5-6 years.
I mean, The Notebook was the same thing for both those people, for Gosling and McAdams. Yeah. Even though Gosling had been in other movies like Remember the Titans, and he'd done things when he was younger, that was the movie when you saw it, and you were like, oh my God, which is funny because it's actually probably Mean Girls for Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, big time, yeah.
It's her role.
Huge, huge.
But then you go to other big ones that we've talked about before the show, Travolta.
Yeah, Travolta, this is, I had this conversation with someone the other day, and the guys in the chat, or anyone
listening. What does he say again? I changed the world.
Yeah, yeah. I was having this conversation with someone. Okay, so the two iconic male breakouts in the 70s, the guys that were like, basically heroes for the rest of their career, and essentially came out of nowhere, would be Travolta in Saturday Night Fever, and Harrison Ford as Han Solo in Star Wars.
Which is funny, because someone just said here it's Han Solo. I mean, it's Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones.
Yeah, but Solo's first.
Solo's first, exactly.
So what I would say is those two guys both had two movies within a few years of each other, right? You have Han Solo in 77, and you have Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think, in 78 or 79.
Right.
And then the same with Travolta. You have Saturday Night Fever in 75, and you have Grease in 78. In both cases, you can't script a star rising any more than those two movies by those two guys at that time.
No.
That's as big as it's ever been. Travolta became, and not only was Travolta's, the reason that I say Travolta's is so relevant in a way that I think Ford's is, but it's not quite on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
Travolta was a fucking dancer.
Yeah, he was a nobody.
He came out and was like, not only am I super, super sexy, not only am I like the super leading man, but I'm dancing.
But I can dance.
And every woman in the world was like,
loves a man that can dance.
That's the guy.
Yeah.
That's the guy. I'm in love with that guy.
I want that guy to do horrible things to me.
And like, so Travolta, I think he might be the all-time rise to stardom out of nowhere guy. Because like, he just exploded in a way that you just can't make up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm going to just go through a few here. We got Michael J. Fox as Marty McFly. Stallone is Rocky. Connery is Goldfinger.
Yep.
Willis, Die Hard. Eddie Murphy, Beverly Hills Cop. Brandon Lee the Crow. We get it, man. We get that you guys want us to do The Crow. We'll do it. I promise. Anthony Hopkins, Silence of the Lambs. Another one to throw in there is Viggo in Lord of the Rings.
And I had this conversation with you arguing this because there's an interesting point you can take on this where you're like, if they had a career of like notable roles before the breakout, does it count?
Viggo had a good career.
Big time. Yeah. He had been in Carlito's Way is a very famous one. That was
Crimson
a big
Tide.
Movie. Crimson Tide. He was in Daylight with Stallone. Like, these are big movies. He was a notable character in a bunch of major releases.
But that was the time when you saw him, you realized for the first time, really, you're like, who is that? Like, they catch your eye a little differently. You know? And it's because he developed that movie star charisma, I think, before he was just filling roles.
The only trilogy that has three movies on my top 50 is Lord of the Rings.
All three of them.
All three of my
top 50.
Of course,
they have to be.
They're
perfect.
All high. They're all like in the top 20, I think. Like, when I was making the list, I was like, the movies aren't higher than these for me. I was like, I want to bump these down so it's not just... But I was like, there's just no way.
You can't. I mean, no matter what, no matter how I try to argue it changed, no matter how much time goes by... Fuck, Peter Jackson. That's another arguable point for a thing.
Agreed.
That's something to get into. All right, so that's a fun little thing we were just riffing on. Another one, couple that popped in my head were like Rebecca Ferguson. Oh, this is something that I just want to talk to people about, not to slide over Rebecca Ferguson in MI5. She was incredible.
She's unbelievable.
You and I had this conversation numerous times about Tom Hardy in Inception, Dark Knight, and Bronson.
Yeah,
right. I strongly believe that Tom Hardy's breakthrough role was in Inception as Eames, because when I watched that movie, I was like, who is this guy? He was just like something magnetic about him. And everybody knows that Tom Hardy's probably my favorite actor. It's like him and Gosling now.
Right.
So I'm biased. But for other people, that didn't happen. It was just like, that guy's cool. Oh, well.
Yeah, this is what I would say. So when we had Anthony and Gavin on here talking about Warrior... You know, Anthony was like, look, everybody says that they saw Bronson. Fucking no one saw Bronson. He's like, no one had seen that movie. Everybody claims they had seen
it afterwards. I'd seen it, but I didn't really, I didn't like.
Yeah, I hadn't seen
it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, any Warrior you saw in theaters, I didn't see Warrior in theaters.
And I saw it in theaters because of Inception.
Yeah, so really, Inception was the movie that I saw Hardy in for the first time. It was the first time I had ever seen him on screen. And I've seen Black Hawk Down, so like, I think I had seen the Star Trek movie that he was in also. I think it's Insurrection, maybe.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't know that was Tom Hardy. I didn't care or pay any attention. So when I saw Tom Hardy in Inception, like, that was a huge movie. That was massive. Like, Inception is very high on my 50, and like, that's a movie everyone saw. It made a ton of money. It did really well. Everyone loved it.
And it was Nolan on the top of the world.
Yeah, it was like Nolan making his first post-Dark Knight movie that everybody was like, oh, wow, this guy, you know, he made The Dark Knight, this incredible movie. Now Inception's almost better. And Tom Hardy's got like a very, very, very relevant role in that movie.
Yeah.
So, but what I would say is that I don't think I walked out of Inception thinking like it was really Tom Hardy that stole the show. I think I was thinking that was a really well cast movie.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know about that Tom Hardy guy. And then when he was in Dark Knight or in Dark Knight Rises, it was like, oh, that's the dude from Inception.
Right. And you said we fell in love with his voice.
Yeah, because it's a hard argument when you say somebody could have a breakout role in terms of the visibility, like J-Law in Winter's Bone,
yeah,
which she got an Oscar nod for. But, like, no one really saw Winter's Bone.
Right. It's the same as Alicia Vikander in the other, or no, what's it called? The Danish Girl?
Yeah.
I didn't really watch that, but she won an Academy Award for it.
Yes, right. But it's like, it's all about, you can have the breakout role for, like, the awards nomination or, like, you know, the critical acclaim, but it really comes down to the movie that everyone sees is the breakout role. It's the same as Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Schwarzenegger was a known quantity, but everybody saw Terminator, so that mattered. And it's like, if you go and look at, you know, with Jennifer Lawrence, it's like, the argument is probably that X-Men First Class is her breakout role.
Yeah.
Probably.
That's interesting.
More than The Hunger Games. But maybe it's The Hunger Games because everybody saw The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
You know? And she's had a massive career since then.
All right. So really quickly, if you guys are in the chat, there's like 40 of you in there, which is awesome. Just throw in what your first, like, Tom Hardy moment was. Inception, Bronson, Dark Knight Rises, whatever it may be. Just Warrior. Let us know. Warrior. There's one other thing. Oh, someone talked about Keanu. It's tough because Keanu as Neo is too... It's too tough because of Bill and Ted and Point Break already happened.
He had already had a massive career.
It's too big. Speed. Yeah. So now that we're 40 minutes into the show, let's move on to our star profiles,
well,
right?
Well, no, we did have one interesting point to bring up here. It's about that? James Cameron.
Oh, right. This is huge.
Yes, yeah, so this
is
really
huge point.
So, guys, if you're listening, if you're watching... you know that we absolutely fucking love James Cameron. We are huge fans. You also know we love coming up with arbitrary rules to support our claims to make this show awesome. And I will say this. Andrew and I are working on a super secret project.
It's a super secret project, but it has to do with fist pumps.
Yes. And if you have been following me on Anchor, you know that I have a show called Fist Pump Film Club. It should give you some sense of where I'm going with this.
Yep.
Andrew and I are writing a rule book.
Yes, okay. And we've studied at Fist Pump Film School, majoring in action adventure, for 2 years.
For 2 years.
We know it better than anyone out there.
And we've decided one of the rules that's going to be in the guidebook, and you guys may have plenty of other rules supported by our thesis statements over the last 2 years.
And we have plenty of rules, too.
One of our rules is James Cameron is the most timeless director of all time.
Of all time. And this is a rule. This isn't a thought. This isn't a thesis.
Yeah.
This is a rule. And if you guys have any arguing points to this, please bring them on. We understand we might not be able to address all of them right now, but think about it. Who are other directors that we put in that category? First people that popped into mind were like, you know, Kubrick. Were
Spielberg.
Were Nora Ephron, if you're looking at like 90s and 2000s rom-coms and things like that.
Big shout 80s. Out to Marissa Serafini.
Yeah, thank you for that, Marissa. You've got Peter Jackson.
Yeah, the idea being that when you watch the films years later, how do the films hold up? How does the identity of the film as it relates to that director's style hold up? And does it feel like you're watching a movie from another time? When I go watch an old Kubrick movie, some of them hold up. Others, like Clockwork Orange, is very hard to watch,
yeah.
I find. With Cameron, he has the distinct disadvantage in terms of his movies aging in the sense that they're sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah, he picks the hardest genre to age.
And he's innovating technology usually when he makes a movie to make the movie. I mean, he has a storied history of creating technology for his movies. However, going back to watch his movies, you go out and watch Alien today. That movie looks better than half the movies that are coming out today.
Yeah.
And it was made 31 years ago.
In the beginning of Aliens in the ship,
yeah.
It's still like you go, and obviously you can feel that it's aged just a little bit. Just a little. Everything ages. Even things that you watched 5 years ago aged a little bit. But it's still so great. In the beginning of Terminator, when they're doing the flashback with the robots and the monsters and the da-da-da-da-da, you can tell it's aged a little bit, but it's still better than a lot of things that are on the Sci-Fi Channel now or low-budget films that come out.
This movie was made for $6 million 35 years ago.
35 years ago for $6 million and with four nobodies, essentially.
Yeah.
And you go back, you watch The Abyss, you watch Terminator, you watch Aliens.
True
and
Lies.
Then you go back and True Lies.
Titanic.
You watch Titanic. You watch even Avatar. Now, Avatar is still one of the most visually stimulating movies you'll ever watch.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, I think, is the argument there is that, like, first off, look at his movies. Look at the careers of the directors you'd put in this conversation to be the most timeless directors.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, let's list off some of the Spielberg movies, just some of the duds that he's made in his career.
I've got a list of, like, 10 here that you listed. So let's start with ones that aren't duds. but have aged poorly, like E.T. and Hook.
Yeah, Hook has aged definitely poorly. Always.
1941.
Amistad. 1941, yeah.
And then you get into movies that haven't really aged yet, but they just were kind of misses. The Terminal, BFG, War Horse, Bridge of Spies, Lincoln. Like, even though these movies are critically and
Lincoln is, like, ridiculous for us to say that it's a miss, but, like, no one gave a fuck.
Daniel Day-Lewis is my, I have favorite actors. I respect him more than any other actor out there.
He's the greatest
actor in
the world.
I have not watched Lincoln.
Yeah. Lincoln is the movie that in 5-10 years, no one's going to remember that movie existed. It's just a weird thing. Some movies matter. Other movies come out and get nominated for Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even his movies from the last 20 years that had Oscar nominations, movies like Amistad, movies like Munich, Bridge of Spies, these are movies that as we go further and further away, they're not remembered. You talk about any movie that Cameron made in his entire career, probably the low point in terms of perception is either The Abyss or Avatar, because those are the two movies that people don't like. But, like, The Abyss is a cult classic to the nines. Like, people love The Abyss. There's no question people love The Abyss. And you talk about Avatar. Avatar is the highest grossing movie ever made.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way you're going to forget that.
You can't argue anything when the numbers. And then, so you go back and you go, I'll be back. Come with me if you want to live. I'm flying. You know, you've got Game Over, Man, Game Over. These are movies that have been quoted for 35, 25, 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, Spielberg's a close second, I would say. But I think on our list, no question, invariably, James Cameron is the most timeless director of all time. In the rule book, Fist Bump Film Club, rule book.
Boom.
Done.
That is a rule. If you want to argue it, if you want to come up with subclauses, you better have a damn good argument.
And you can find us on Twitter at AMA Podcast to share your points if you want to get in on the conversation. All right, guys, we're going to move into this movie a little bit. We're almost an hour into the show.
Hey, man, this is what we do.
So, number one, Schwarzenegger. We discussed this a little bit. Conan the Destroyer, Conan the Barbarian, The Scavenger Hunt in 1979. Those were the three films prior to the release of this. Schwarzenegger was a 7-time Mr. Olympia champion. Interestingly enough, in 1975, the film Pumping Iron came out, which is the documentary about his final run. I believe, actually, the film came out in 77.
That movie is so good.
And 75 was his last run. And, yeah, it's phenomenal. I love that movie. I'm a huge fan of it. The world knew who he was, but they knew who he was in the way that they know who, like, I don't know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson was in, like, 1999. Like, he was famous.
Yeah.
But he wasn't, like, really famous.
No one knew his name was Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, he was a wrestler. The Rock. Yeah. He was that guy that if you followed wrestling, you knew, and he was in some movies. Same with Schwarzenegger. He was Mr. Olympia. He had been in some movies. But, like, he wasn't an actor. He wasn't, like, a household name yet.
No.
The Terminator made him.
People were just
name.
Fascinated by him.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then on the other side, you have Linda Hamilton, The Children of the Corn being, I think, the big notable movie she had been in prior to this. Tag, The Assassination Game in 82, and The Stone Boy in 84. Really, there's not much to say about Linda Hamilton aside from the fact that she ended up marrying and divorcing Cameron later on.
Right.
But she's both of them really were sort of, Schwarzenegger was much bigger. He was the star, but Linda Hamilton was effectively a nobody when they made this movie.
Yeah, and like, we were going to do a three people thing, but it really was the same argument for all of them, is that they all weren't really doing anything. So Linda Hamilton had done Tag,
yep,
The Assassination Game, a couple TV movies and shows, and then she did Children of the Corn, which, yep, is the only one that I really recognize in 84, and then she did The Stone Boy also in 1984, and then she did this.
Yeah.
And then she did Terminator 2.
Yeah, so it's pretty, I mean, you could tag this as a breakout role for her, except that she just didn't do much as an actress.
She didn't really break out, unfortunately, which doesn't make any sense, because, like, people talking in the chat were talking about how hot she was at the time.
Wasn't she?
She was super 80s hot.
Wasn't she in the TV show in the mid-80s, Beauty and the Beast? Wasn't that?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's that was a big hit, I think, right?
Yeah, but still, a big hit relative to T1 and T2.
Yeah.
Someone just said Tarantino. I don't know if we want to get into that conversation now, but his body of work is just half that.
Yeah,
the only
issue with Tarantino, just before we just, it's that it's extremely stylized.
Yeah.
Extremely stylized, and it's great, but it was ripped off and parodied so much in terms of its specific style. It's much more like Wes Anderson, where at a certain point the gimmick just turned people off. There's no gimmick to Cameron's movies.
Yeah, and you also got to remember, timelessness also goes well along with palatability.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there that won't watch Tarantino movies because of the content, the subject matter.
Yeah, the subject matter, it's just like the amount of pop culture references that are eventually going to have aged. Like, there's so much of that in his writing that it's hard to take that. It's hard to call that timeless. So moving on to the people who made the film.
Yep.
We mentioned Cameron. We've talked about him on here a bunch of different times. Cameron, I mean, it's hard to really say much that hasn't been said. You know, he worked as a truck driver. made that short, worked with Roger Corman, kind of learned the ropes, and continued just like, hey, you should do this, you should try this, try, you know, putting lights under this piece of foil, or like, you know, do it like this, shoot it like this, and just constantly innovating, a real visionary.
If you go back to even just the most recent thing, he brought us what we know as 3D movies now. Avatar was the first practical 3D. The whole thing was shot on 3D cameras that we'd ever seen, and now that's just become the norm.
Yeah.
And then you want to move on to, like, Gaylan Hurd. She was married to Cameron. She's one of the biggest female producers in all of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Walking Dead, you know, like T2, Aliens, Armageddon. It goes on and on and on with her.
Yeah, they both worked with Roger Corman in the 80s, and that's where they met. They wrote this together, as well as with William H. Wisher Jr., who's the third writer on this. Wisher actually, when I was looking at the credits, I was thinking, like, oh, Wisher's going to be one of those guys who's credited as, like, story credits or something like that. But he actually ended up working with Cameron, who's a close friend of his, on T1, on T2, Judge Dredd, The 13th Warrior, The Exorcist prequel. He has uncredited rewrites as a script doctor on Die Hard with a Vengeance and Live Free or Die Hard. So, okay. A very successful writer. He was punched in for additional dialogue on this movie. That's pretty much his story. So
yeah. All right. So let's move on past production development then into critical and box office reception. Do we want to? Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that afterwards. So this was the studio was Orion Pictures. It only cost $6.4 million to make. It's not often we see two digits with a decimal in between them.
Yeah.
Opened October 26th of 1984. It grossed $38 million domestic, $40 worldwide for a total of $78 million. So over 10 times its budget. It was number one at $4 million. Critically, it's 8.0. And this is our highest reviewed movie, I think, ever on the show.
Yeah,
or T2, maybe?
It's old, so it's one of those issues where, like, the 100% on the critics and all critics is, like, there's not very many reviews.
Yeah, it's, like, six reviews. Or eight of each of them, yeah. And then the audience critics. So it's 100% by all critics, 100% by top critics, which, like I said, it's six critics, eight critics, and then 89% by the audience. And up here we've got the box office graphic.
I pulled the unadjusted, the all-time Cameron graphic. Just, I mean, if you go by adjustment, some of these are a little tough, because, like, the $519 million by T2 in 1991, obviously.
2,777 millions.
Yeah, but he's made over $6 billion with his movies, and that's nine movies.
Yeah,
that's nine movies. Two of which are documentaries, by the way.
And there's another reason why we call him the most timeless director. It's because he didn't do what Spielberg did and oversaturate himself. He didn't have the opportunity to fail as much because he didn't try as much.
Now, let's talk in 10 years when he's made five more Avatar movies.
Exactly. This could be, and then the rule might change. I mean, because he is working on five more, which could, there's no way it's going to be a good thing.
I don't know how, like, I don't know where his fascination with making, like, the world of Avatar, it seems crazy to me.
Yeah, I really don't understand why he thinks it needs to be made into, like, roots of 2019.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
like, effectively, we don't need a 10 DVD case.
Effectively, Disney buying Lucasfilm and being like, we're going to make a ton more Star Wars movies is like, okay, good or bad, that makes a lot of sense. Because
yeah.
They're going to make a ton of money, and there's a hunger for the content. Everybody wants that. So even if the Han Solo movie's not good and Episode 9, like, even if by the time those are coming out, it's just like, all right, I'm tired of the Boba Fett movie. Doesn't matter. People will see them.
They'll still go watch it.
I don't know a single person who wants to see Avatar 2.
Me neither.
I don't know, or 3, or 4, or 5.
And why, what is it, how long has it been since the first one came out?
2009, I think.
Yeah, it's been 8 years almost.
Yeah, I mean, also on top of that, it's like, the whole Lucasfilm thing is like, we're going to make a Star Wars land, a Disneyland, like, we're going to build into a global brand for this generation.
Right.
I think he wants Avatar to do the same thing.
It's not going to happen. Who? It's Sam Worthington.
Yeah.
No one cares about Sam Worthington
anymore.
You
got to do like a Fast and the Furious move and just inject. You got to
yeah.
put like Charlize and Hardy in
yes,
there. You got
exactly. Okay. So that really quickly. So what are your favorite time travel movies? Just real quick, like top three time travel movies.
Well, I have some interesting ones.
Deja vu.
I think most of you know that Edge of Tomorrow would be on the list for me.
Of course.
Yeah,
it's excellent.
Yeah, you know, basically science fiction Groundhog's Day.
Exactly, which is also another great time travel movie.
Yeah, this was the second film we ever covered on the show, and with Roxy Stryer a long time ago. And
that's the episode.
Oh yeah, I can't believe we didn't open the episode this way. How did we space?
What?
We hit 10 million views today.
Hey! 10 million.
We hit 10 million views on Action Movie Anatomy, a total
Holy
on the show today.
Shit.
I, like, totally spaced. I was planning. I, like, knew that it was going to happen on the average. Like,
right.
We hit 10 million
wow.
views today. The show has been watched by 10 million people on YouTube.
10 million people. That is massive. That is incredible. Like, I can't even. You and I started talking about the show while yeah. waiting tables in a restaurant as an idea of something to do yeah. 2.5 years ago.
Yeah. I can't believe it's in the middle of my list.
Yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow was that's like my favorite time travel movie.
And that was our second episode ever. And if you want to see me sweat through my shirt, you can also watch that episode.
Man, nothing is more true than that.
It was horrible.
10 million. It's a real thing.
Congratulations, man.
Hell yeah.
All right. So jumping in with my time travel movie, I'm going to do Back to the Future. One of my favorites growing up. Watched it a lot. I actually haven't seen the movie in over 10 years, but I still love it.
Remind me on a point that I want to talk about Back to the Future in just a second.
Okay.
My number two, I'm going to go with Deja Vu.
Of course you are.
Probably not a great film, and I'll agree, Deja Vu did not make my top 50 movies.
Yes. Did any Tony Scott Denzel collab?
I don't think. Do you know what? Interestingly enough, the closest one was Man on Fire.
That makes sense.
Maybe it's in there. I forgot that it's in the high 40s.
I don't think so.
But I don't think it did. I tried to talk myself into any of the five.
Right.
And I had different... I had different arguments for each one, like being like, all right, like Man on Fire could make it for me, or like Deja Vu could make it, Taking of Pelham, Crimson Tide. I really right. love all, even Unstoppable, I love all five movies, but I couldn't justify bumping any of the movies.
I get that.
Even Hot Rod or Just Friends, like these comedies that are in there, I couldn't bump them for these movies because I've seen those movies so many times.
Man on Fire, I bet I could would maybe make my list, but I'm not positive.
I love Man on Fire.
Yeah. All right, so my second one is going to be The Fountain. I've talked about this movie a few times. Rachel Weisz, Hugh Jackman, just yeah. awesome. Go yeah. watch it.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
My last one is Terminator 2. I mean, how could it not be on the list? I mean, there's a lot of other great ones in here. Looper, you mentioned, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
And obviously, you have like... I mean, there's 12 Monkeys. There's so many.
There's so many good
Time
ones.
Time Bandits. There's a ton of movies
Time
that I love.
Time Cop.
Yeah. But Terminator 2, for me, I believe Terminator 2 is the greatest action movie of all time. Yeah. It is not my favorite action movie of all time. That's a different list. But I believe that Terminator 2 is the greatest action movie of all time. And really, ultimately, and this is another thing we talked about with Cameron, but like, this is one of the only examples ever in history where a director comes along and he's like, okay, you're going to give me this much rope to do what I want to do, and I'll do it as the best I can. Now, yeah. the next time I do the same thing, the sequel, and you give me all of the resources, I'm going to make the movie I should have made.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff in the script yeah. for 2 was in the script for 1. They just couldn't do it. The Cyberdyne plot with Miles Dyson, that's all in the script for 1. They had to change the script because they couldn't afford to do it. Cameron is truly a visionary. He was like, yeah. hey, give me the money, I'll do it. Otherwise, I'm going to have to make this cheaper movie. And you know that there was like running issues with Orion, but they were not willing to invest money in promoting this. They were like, oh, you have a B-level slasher movie. It'll do fine. These movies will live in the theaters for 2 or 3 weeks.
What happened to Orion Pictures?
Yeah. Schwarzenegger still holds a grudge to this day, reportedly, that they wouldn't put money behind promoting the movie.
Oh, of course.
Like everybody just was like Orion wanted the movie to end with the explosion by the dumpster. That's when they wanted
just
the movie
be
to
be done.
And Cameron was like, fuck you, quote, that's not where my movie ends.
No.
And, yeah, it's just really interesting. We've talked about before, like, these visionary people, how much of kind of pricks they can be. Like,
yeah, I mean, but you got to be.
Yeah.
You've got to be. I mean, like, you know, our buddy Matt Haggerty talks about Nolan's not a prick.
Yeah.
But he is always the first person on set, always the last person on set, and everything is done exactly how he wants it done.
Yeah, he's like, no, that's a good idea. No, we're doing it this way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how you should do it. That's why they're directors.
I thought this was really funny. Schwarzenegger's iconic catchphrase, I'll be back. Schwarzenegger thought it should be "I will be back."
I will be back
because he thought it sounded more machine-like without the contraction. And Cameron says to him, "quote I don't tell you how to act, so don't tell me how to write." And that's how it happened. And like, of course, I will.
But
be back.
But he should tell him how to act.
Yeah,
he's the director. That's great. Oh, and then yeah, my number one is Looper.
Oh, which, I thought you had mentioned it already.
I hadn't, no, which is fine. I think it's funny that we people are getting real heated in the chat right now between T1 and T2, and which is the better film. It's never going to be answered on this show.
It's Terminator 2, as far as I'm concerned.
Ben is concerned. He thinks it's Terminator 2. I actually like Terminator 2 more as well, but arguing which one is better, I will never, ever step foot in that.
Yeah, it's a hard conversation to have.
Yeah.
So the thing I was going to say was this, and this is just, we're just off on tangents, but whatever. Yeah. You guys have watched a lot of episodes, so you know what we
10
like.
10 million tangents.
Frank Darabont directed The Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, which I watched for the first time this week, the movie The Mist, and The Majestic. Those are the four films Frank Darabont directed.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, for all accounts, people think of Darabont as one of the all-time directors, largely just because of Shawshank and Green Mile. People like the other two movies.
Only Shawshank.
Yeah. People love Green Mile.
Yeah. Movie. No, I know.
Yeah. But really, what's interesting is I always get him mixed up with Robert Zemeckis. Like, in a trivia question recently, I answered Zemeckis to a Darabont question. The reason being there, because Robert Zemeckis directed Forrest Gump in 1994, and Robert Zemeckis also directed Castaway in 2000. Mm-hmm. So there's a Tom Hanks crossover, and Zemeckis, so 94, because Shawshank lost to Pulp Fiction at the Oscars. Like, there's just a crossover there.
Right.
Robert Zemeckis, unbeknownst to me, like, I would be curious to know, how many Robert Zemeckis movies can you name right now?
I couldn't name many, but I've seen his name in the beginning of a lot of good movies and a lot of bad movies.
Robert Zemeckis is probably the most under-celebrated. Like, I hate to say this because I said, like,
there's a movie,
similar.
There's like a big movie that I've watched recently that's like one of my favorites growing up that he directed, because I've seen his name a million times.
He directed everything.
Yeah.
The reason I bring it up is you mentioned Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
He directed Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
He directed Flight with Denzel.
Beowulf.
He directed Beowulf. He directed
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump, I just mentioned. He directed Romancing the Stone. He directed, like, his career is ridiculous. If you start going through that list, there's movies in there, just start, if you're looking at it, just throw a few others out where you're like, oh yeah.
The Walk, Flight, you got Castaway, which you said, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Roger A Christmas Rabbit. Carol, Romancing the Stone, Death Becomes Her, Contact.
Contact.
What? Jesus. Yeah. This guy might be more timeless than Cameron.
I think he's made some bad movies.
He has made a lot of bad movies. 13 Ghosts, House of Wax, Gothica, House on Haunted Hill, The Reaping. Okay, yeah. So he's made a lot of really bad movies and a lot of really good movies.
Yeah. He didn't direct all those, did he?
I think he did.
Think you're sure, like a producer?
Oh, I might. I mean, it's just the first thing that popped up on IMDb, or I mean, on Google.
But in any case, Zemeckis, I was just blown away looking at the list. I was just like, holy shit. The career here, the number of movies is blowing my mind. I did not know. I had no idea that Robert Zemeckis was that legendary.
All those movies I listed, he directed.
Yeah, so yeah. There's some bad ones, too.
Yeah,
big
that's
career.
Crazy.
Big career.
So, okay, so moving on. One thing that was nice was that someone had the balls to come in and say that they actually didn't mind T3 Salvation that much, which was good, so we could break up the argument of T1 and T2.
Yep.
And we're going to move on to our AMA question of the day, which is from @PrimeShock1, who is David Lunsford. Which movie has been more important to Cameron's career, Aliens or Terminator? I feel like I answered that pretty strongly.
Yep.
In my thesis. I really think Terminator is the most important thing that's happened, although I like Aliens more.
Yeah, Terminator is the most important. I would agree completely. So what we decided to do for today was, because we skipped Fist Pump Moment early in the show, we decided we were going to combine it with Favorite Line and do them as a paired conversation today.
Yeah.
Really just because for so many people, it's hard for I'll Be Back not to be the Fist Pump Moment. There's a lot of Fist Pump Moments in this movie, but like dividing the two for me when I was thinking about it, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I decided we would just do them back to back, and that way we can alleviate the possible combination there. So why don't you go ahead and jump in first, guys? If you're watching for the first time or listening for the first time, Fist Pump Moment is that thing that happens. You're watching a movie, something happens, you like look around, you're like, are you seeing this right now? This is so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
We get to watch the rest of this movie. This is so rad. Oh, I love this movie. And this movie has some great ones.
Oh, there's tons of them. I mean, the whole thing is a fist pump, honestly. I mean, even from the very beginning when Arnold deals with the guys, the punks in the park.
Yeah.
Just him being naked is sweet. But
nice night for a walk. Nice night for a walk.
Nice night for a walk. I think it's when he jumps on the car punches through the glass. I don't know why, but just like watching that and thinking, like, this movie was made 35 years. It was just so sweet. So badass and terrifying.
Yes.
That was my fist pump for sure.
I think my fist pump moment, it's actually the same, I'm pretty sure, as my T2 one. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and watch the episode again.
Oh, I know what it is.
I get the sneaking suspicion, and I think it's the theme music. This is the alt, for me, this is the all-time, whenever I say in the example of fist pump moment, what it can be. I always reference it could be the theme music, because for me, Terminator 2, I think, and Terminator 1, it's the theme music.
Yeah.
And what I love so much about the difference between the T1 and the T2 music is, Terminator 2, it's like big, and it's like,
Yeah, it's just so good.
The Terminator 2 music is awesome.
It's like a little more produced.
Yeah, way more produced, because it's much more of an epic movie. Terminator 1, though, like the music starts and it's like, It's like it's got this like super 80s.
It's like a video game almost.
Yeah. And then it like fades for a second. And when the horn first comes in, it's much more like muted and like kind of off key almost.
Yeah.
It just sounds like you're hitting keys on a keyboard.
Yeah.
And it's probably exactly what it is, like horns on a keyboard. And it's that for me, it's when the music comes in. That's what I love so much. I just fucking love the music in Terminator. So that would be that. What about you on favorite line? Thanks, Marissa.
For me on favorite line, well, we got a lot of people here with great fist pumps talking about in the gun store, Linda Hamilton's hair, when he gets the shades. Fuck you, asshole.
Yeah.
Is,
fuck you, asshole.
Fist pump car driven into cop station. Yep, that's awesome.
Yep.
Okay, so... And thank you guys again for that. They're like, of course you guys get 10 million views. You guys are awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we love you guys. So I think mine, that whole exchange in the car where he's kind of telling her what's going on. There's like a bunch of great lines that go on there. She's like, are you saying it's from the future? And he's like, I'm saying it's from one possible future. Yeah. I just think that's a cool line. And then when she bites him, he's like, cyborgs don't feel pain. I do. Don't do that again.
Don't do that again.
And then he goes, it doesn't feel pity or pain or remorse, and it won't stop until you're dead, that whole long thing. You and I kept leaning over to each other and being like, God, being such a stud.
Yeah.
There's something about his... You 100% believe that he is a guy sent back in time to save the future that is ending. The
Even
world is ending.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't matter. There's something about his delivery... Everything he says, it has to be done now, Sarah. And it's just like, I just love it.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
So that whole exchange in the car is amazing.
Yeah, I think some of the strongest moments in this movie are, it's his exposition when he's explaining what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes a little while. Like, I do think that this movie starts and it's cool, but I think it gets better once he starts explaining what's going on. You're kind of in the dark for a little while.
Yeah.
And I love when she's asking what the Terminator is. And I wish I had the exact line written in front of me because it's a little bit longer. But it says something like, the first models were rubber skin. We spotted them easy.
Yeah.
You know, but these ones are different. He starts explaining and you're like, this is terrifying.
Like, skin bleeds, bad breath, everything.
Yeah. And when he's explaining all that because – and then like the few scenes they cut to the future – it's just like, it's the coolest version of, they don't even reference Skynet in this movie, I don't think. I think that's later. I think it's the second movie. But like, the whole idea of machines that are adaptive and like they adapt and they learn and they be, you know what I mean? Like the idea that the machines would try to cover themselves in rubber and it wouldn't work and the humans would be smart enough to spot that.
So then they started doing it with the skin.
It's so cool and so fucking terrifying.
It really is. It's like legitimately scary. And that's one thing that we haven't talked about yet today is a lot of people have talked about the eye scene.
Yeah.
And that is the thing that's aged the most poorly on the whole movie is the actual mask.
The puppet they
the
made.
The puppet.
Yeah.
But that scene is horrifying. And it was so scary as a kid. What was Earl Bone? Is that the captain, the police captain? Who is Earl Bone, guys? You guys are talking about him in the chat and saying that he's like one big fist pump. And I'm not even, everyone says he's funny as hell, just a stereotypical sleazeball psychiatrist.
Oh,
psychiatrist.
You're talking about Dr. Silberman.
Yeah. Yes.
The fact that Dr. Silberman came back in the second movie, too, is great.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a great
call. He is great.
Yeah, of course he is.
Just as easily could have been Paxton, but Paxton wasn't old enough. If this movie had been 94, it would have been Paxton.
Should have been Paxton. Yeah. Okay, so that's our favorite line. So moving on, do you want to do like a quick just talk about a recast real quick?
Yeah, well, we sort of had the conversation a little bit here about recasting Schwarzenegger modern day is tough. Early on, we tried
to do
it
impossible.
A few times, and we just, Dwayne The Rock Johnson was the only person. It's just because of physical stature. It is interesting if you go back and read some of the reports about the casting on this movie.
Was it like, the guy that plays like the Viking on Game of Thrones, though, or whatever? Isn't there like a giant on that?
Are you talking about... Oh.
A gigantic dude on Game of Thrones?
Are you talking about Jason Momoa, who plays Khal Drogo, who's going to be Aquaman?
No. Is that the only guy? There's not like a gigantic white guy on there?
I mean, there's a couple really big dudes in that show, but like not guys that you'd be like, that could be an action star.
Okay.
I mean, there's definitely
newsbreak. I don't watch Game of Thrones.
There's definitely heroes that exist that you could cast in movies. But I thought what was really interesting is going back to the beginning of the casting on this movie, you know, Cameron had a pretty strong idea once they settled on Schwarzenegger that was who he needed to make the movie.
Yeah.
But there was other guys, like, for instance, Mel Gibson turned down the role of the Terminator simply feeling he wasn't right for the part. After seeing the film, he praised Schwarzenegger as a much better choice. One of the major influences for this movie, for the tech-noir style that Cameron wanted to make, was Road Warrior. He loved the Road Warrior. He thought it was so cool, and he wanted to make a movie inspired by that. So I think he loved Gibson for that reason. And one thing that I thought was, like, super duper interesting was, I can't really imagine the Terminator being anything other than, like, a giant dude. Like,
right.
In the second movie, it's a novel concept that Jason or Robert Patrick is the T-1000.
The Mountain.
Yeah, he's huge, but
but he couldn't do it.
He's huge, but he's just not.
He's just not a good actor or whatever.
Well, he's a good actor. He's just, like, a giant man.
Right.
He's more burly than he is, like, menacing.
Okay, gotcha.
He's very menacing, but he's just not, like, chiseled. But, like, for instance, like, okay, Michael Fassbender we love, and Fassbender plays a robot in the Prometheus film. And Fassbender is terrifying, and he's intense, and, like, Fassbender could be a robot in a movie, like a killer robot, for sure, no question. But he's, like, this little guy.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different feeling.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy to... You can't recast Arnold.
So if you do that, you really have to cast, like, a different tone, a different feel. But as far as Kyle Reese and Sarah Connor go, Linda Hamilton and Michael Biehn, who would we cast for just those two if this movie was to be made today?
So what are we thinking, like, mid-30s?
Well, Sarah Connor is supposed to be 18 in this movie.
Right.
Linda Hamilton's supposed to be 18 years old.
She's definitely not.
No, and I mean, you could change the age, I guess, but for the purpose of the sequel and everything. I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Emily Blunt, because I love Emily Blunt, and I could definitely see her playing that role.
Oh, you know
well.
Who I see is Alicia Vikander. It's Jesus Christ, I'm so annoyed, I can't remember her name. It's the girl from, it's not Amelia Clark, it's the other, like, young, pretty, the Divergent girl.
Oh, Shailene Woodley?
Shailene Woodley. I could see Shailene Woodley is Linda Hamilton for sure.
Yeah, I like Shailene Woodley.
I like that. I saw a movie yesterday. Is it Black Hat? Is that the movie with Liam Hemsworth?
With Chris Hemsworth.
Is it Chris Hemsworth in that one?
The Michael Mann movie.
Yeah, what's the one with Liam Hemsworth where it's, like, also a hacking movie? Because I saw him and, you know, I don't like Liam Hemsworth.
The one with Gary Oldman and Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
I can't think of what that movie's called.
That one. That was one. I don't know if he'd be good. Who'd be a good...
Deception or something or whatever that movie's
called?
Yeah,
something like that. What about... So the thing about... So you got to think about the things that make Michael Biehn Michael Biehn. He's not quite... leading man a charisma.
No.
He can't be that. He's got to be, like, slightly off of that.
Yeah.
But he's still got to be, like, a good guy. So
I could easily, and just this is just because he could be in everything, but I could see Oscar Isaacs playing him. That would be super solid.
You mean me?
Oscar Isaacs is really intense.
Oscar Isaacs could do that. That'd be great.
He'd be great. I could see Renner. Renner would be great.
That's it. That's the one.
That's the guy.
Jeremy Renner's the guy.
Because he's got that secondary character. He's, like, perfect at being the second
character. He's kind of grizzled a little bit. He's got, like, a rough around the edges is the one I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think he'd be pretty great. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Tom Hardy and Alicia Vikander. I'd watch the shit out of that movie.
if it was Jeremy Renner in the Kyle Reese role, it would have to be
someone just a little bit older.
I don't know that it's necessary she's 18. I mean, I think you want her to be younger, but I don't think it's necessary she's 18. So I would probably, like, Blunt makes sense to me, but the chemistry between those two doesn't seem realistic.
And then Shailene Woodley and Renner, it almost feels like he'd be like her older brother, which is kind of weird.
You'd need someone to be a little older.
Called Paranoia is that movie. Who's 4'11"? Charlie Hunman's 4'11"?
Charlie,
I don't
Hunman's
believe fine. That. All right,
King
so
himself.
That was just a fun thing to talk about. So let's move on to our categories.
Yeah, right? There's three action movie categories, guys. There's totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. Movies that are totally legit are like... Lone Survivor and
The Fugitive.
Yeah, they hold together really well. Even Terminator 2, we believe, is totally legit because they're driven by, like, strong premise. They don't really make you laugh unintentionally. Movies that make you laugh unintentionally, like, the whole time but are still great, like Face Off and Con Air.
Speed.
Yeah, Speed. Yeah. That's, like, the middle category.
Oh, yeah, that is the middle category.
But
I apologize.
They really have
Demolition
to be,
Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are, like, totally ridiculous. And then ridiculously legitimate is the middle category. A lot of our movies fit into that category, and those are movies that are, you do laugh unintentionally here and there, but they're grounded by, like, a couple really strong factors.
Yeah, The Rock. Predator. Yes.
Yeah, and this movie to me is totally legit. I don't laugh unintentionally in this movie really at all.
No, I mean, literally the only part of this movie where there's two parts. It's the beginning with the robots in the flashback, and it's when Arnold's like doing his face thing, like he's pulling out his eye,
and like a lot of the just like the 80s-isms that have aged.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of things we pulled. I wrote down, Ben and I were just like, I mean, we've been drinking a little bit, and there was just like Tab soda, Uzis at the store.
He's like now. What's he say? He's like, now the handguns you can take over the counter. Or was it the rifles?
It's the rifles, but the handguns you got to wait a week.
So if you could take the rifles now, sir, can I get your ID? Thanks for buying this huge gun.
Yeah, like an automatic shotgun. The jacket. I don't know why I wrote jacket. Smoking inside.
Yeah.
Phone books. Cassette players, the perms, the hair, like people talk about the hair relentlessly.
The color scheme, one thing I was saying is like, it's funny because this movie was so big and iconic in the 80s. When people say something is so 80s, it's referencing stuff that at the time was like young and innovative and new. Like the colors of like the rifles, for instance, the purple and the green, the neons. That's a very
80s color
thing. But at the time, camera was just like, that is what those colors would be. Not like... It's just weird when you think about that. That's the stuff that became 80s.
Yeah, because now when we get lasers in movies, they're almost like this like clear color. I don't even know how to describe it. But back then it was like blues and greens and purples.
Yeah, bright neon colors like Gem and the Holograms or something.
So you're saying that it's completely legit. I have to agree. It's totally legitimate. The only moments, like I said, are those two. That's it. Yeah.
So we only have one category and one category left, and that is called
The Pitch.
And guys, we are approaching episode 100 quickly. We are just around the corner from that, so we have big news, stuff to announce, but for next week...
Can we just level with people on what's going on next week? Because people are, like, very excited for the pitch. We got a lot of people in chat right now. So we have something that we want to happen.
Yes.
It feels like it might not, if you want to let them know.
Yeah, we shouldn't talk about the specifics exactly, but the movie that we might do next week is Heat. We love Heat, and there's a reason specifically we would do it, and we might get to do it. It may not happen next week. We're working on it.
We have a special guest, and exactly, we're working on it.
And if that happens, fantastic. We can't wait. Heat's one of my 10 favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
We've talked about it endlessly. The fact that it hasn't been on the show is crazy. I love Heat. I can't wait to talk about it.
People have been talking about The Crow for an hour and a half and for 94 episodes.
It's so crazy.
So maybe we put up a poll if we don't do Heat with The Crow and another film that people have been begging for.
Yeah, there's a couple movies in the wings. What's going to happen, guys, the other thing I'm going to level with you guys on is Andrew booked a movie.
Hey!
He's booked the lead in a movie.
I did. Thank you. I'm very excited.
I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago when you first found out, and it's super exciting news. He's going to be filming for 3 weeks straight. So in those 3 weeks, we're getting creative as far as how we're doing it. We will have episodes, but as far as like how we're going to do the episodes, we're sorting that out now. So we have some movies that we might like pre-tape a show that would show on one of those weeks, something like that. We'll sort that part out. But go and follow us on Twitter at AMA Podcast if you want to have a say in what's going on. We'll likely post the poll by tomorrow, Thursday, or Friday. And that will be, unless we confirm Heat, which would be awesome.
Yes.
So it'll be that, or it'll be this poll's going to go up. And guys, we have a couple sweet movies left before we get to 100. And last but not least, May 2nd, we are going to be making our second appearance on the Ultimate Movie Trivia Showdown!
Yes! Dun, dun, dun. The champions are back.
We're so excited. We're 1-0 right now. We've got an amazing match coming up against Ken Nowzog.
Nerds Watch.
And Rachel Cushing, the Nerds Watch. They think they're so good.
We're going to destroy them.
Yeah, we have something really special planned. We're masters of deception.
So we really are.
It's going to be a great episode. We cannot wait.
And if we end up getting the action category, like, oh my God. We're just waiting for that to happen.
I know. We didn't get it in the first one.
No. Anyway, watch the show May 2nd.
Yeah.
I hate them.
We're so excited. anyway, that's the other piece of news. And aside from that, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being a part of 10 million hits on Action Movie Anatomy. Marissa, big thanks to you. For Marissa.
Yep. Marissa, where can people find you, our lovely engineer? Serafini TV.
And
guys,
on Fridays every single week on the Popcorn Talk Network doing
Anatomy of a Movie.
Exactly. Anatomy of a Movie, where they cover more than just action movies.
Yeah, it's like the show, except for they cover every single movie that comes out. And if you guys want to find me, you can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter. You can find me here on Fridays for the unproduced table reads. And hopefully you'll be able to find me in the movie Bloody Eyes in about a year.
So excited for that. Thanks. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Where can we follow you, Ben?
Oh, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
I already said it.
Okay. Awesome.
See you guys next week.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.